I'm glad Mark remembered that, because I think I'm going to need your help this week. Genesis chapter 23. Genesis chapter 23. I guess it was Monday afternoon. Kimberly asked me, she said, "Are you sure you're going to have enough for Wednesday night?" And I said, "I'm sure we will." Right? Don't you think? And I knew 22 had a lot that we would talk about. And I know, or I expect, that 24 has a lot that we'll talk about. And so 23 was kind of stuck here in the middle, and I felt like it didn't need to fall into one of the other two, and I didn't feel like we ought to skip it. So hopefully tonight we'll find some things in Genesis chapter 23 that we can use that will help us to draw closer to God, closer to Christ, and be more what we ought to be as Christians. So last week, where we left it, Isaac had gone up on Mount Moriah, Abraham had taken him up on Mount Moriah, and there he was intending to offer him as a sacrifice, because God had commanded him to sacrifice his son. But as seems to generally be the case with Abraham, he comes out unscathed, right? Not only does he not have to offer his son, Isaac, as a sacrifice, God provides a ready-made sacrifice for him. He doesn't have to chase down or hunt some animal. It's just right there, and he goes and easily gets it and offers it as a sacrifice. And so we see that over and over again, don't we, in the life of Abraham? It looks like things aren't going his way. It looks like he's sort of stepping outside of what God has told him to do. And somehow, some way, things just work out. And Abraham continues to be blessed. Why would Abraham ever have reason to doubt God as he's continually blessed, even though he's not continually being obedient? Yes, he was faithful to God. Yes, generally speaking, he was obedient to God. Yes, he was called a friend of God. But he wasn't perfect, far from perfect. And I hope that we can take some comfort in seeing that in the life of a great man like Abraham, to know that even though we sin, God continues to bless us. What did Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount? He causes the sun to shine and the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. Just because you're living out of step with God doesn't mean the sun's not going to shine on you, right? And sometimes maybe we look at the world around us and we think, well, the sun's shining brighter on those who are living outside of Christ. But we understand, I hope we understand, like Abraham and like all the others that we read about in Hebrews chapter 11, that great hall of faith, we understand that we're not living for this country, we're not living for this world, but we're seeking a better home, a better country. And so we look to that better home. We look to that better country in eternity in heaven with God. And that keeps us focused, hopefully, on the things we ought to be focused on. I think it'd be safe to say that up to this point in the life of Abraham, the things that we've studied, he hadn't lost anything. Has he? He left his home. But I think we remember reading, he pretty much took everything with him, right? He left his country, but he had all his stuff. And then even through his sin, even through his lies, he gets more stuff. And he gets the son that was promised to him. But even before that, he got the son that he wanted to have on his own. So he's not lost anything, really, to this point in our studies. But that changes in Genesis chapter 23. I want us to go ahead and read the chapter, and then we'll back up and look at it in smaller sections. Anybody want to read?
I'll read.
Okay, Jimmy.
Sarah lived to be 127 years old. She died at Kiriath-Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. Then Abraham rose from beside his dead wife and spoke to the Hittites. He said, I'm a foreigner and a stranger among you. Send me some property for a burial site here so I can bury my dead. The Hittites replied to Abraham, Sir, listen to us. You're a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will refuse you his tomb for burying your dead. Then Abraham rose and bowed down before the people of the land, the Hittites. He said to them, If you're willing to let me bury my dead, then listen to me and intercede with Ephron, son of Zohar, on my behalf, so he will sell me the cave at Machpelah, which belongs to him and is at the end of his field. Ask him to sell it to me for the full price as a burial site among you. Ephron the Hittite was sitting among his people, and he replied to Abraham in the hearing of all the Hittites who had come to the gate of his city. No, my lord, he said, listen to me. I give you the field. I give you the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead. Again, Abraham bowed down before the people of the land, and he said to Ephron in their hearing, Listen to me, if you will. I will pay the price of the field. Accept it from me so I can bury my dead there. Ephron answered Abraham, Listen to me, my lord. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver, but what is that between you and me? Bury your dead. Abraham agreed to Ephron's term, and weighing out for him the price he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weight current among the merchants. So Ephron's field in Machpelah near Mamre, both the field and the cave in it, and all the trees within the borders of the field was deeded to Abraham as his property in the presence of all the Hittites who had come to the gate of the city. Afterward, Abraham buried his wife Sarah in the cave in the field at Machpelah near Mamre, which is at Hebron in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave in it is where were deeded to Abraham by the Hittites as a burial site.
Thank you, Jimmy. Let's talk about Sarah. Through the majority of the last several chapters we've looked at, we've dealt very heavily on the life of Abraham and focused on Abraham. We've said a little bit about Sarah here and there, but I want us to focus on Sarah for a little bit tonight. What do we know about Sarah? She was beautiful. We know that. At least her husband thought so, right? And kings. Kings thought that too. So she was a beautiful woman. Even in old age, as Dusty pointed out last week, she was a beautiful woman. She lived to be 127 years old. Now, I found this interesting, that she is the only woman where we find an age. And she's the only woman where we find a detailed account of her death and burial in all of Scripture. That's interesting to me. Maybe that's why we didn't skip this chapter, right? It's in here for a reason, right? So Sarah was 127 years old when she died. What else do we know about Sarah? We can even, if you want to, you can think about some things that maybe some New Testament writers had to say about Sarah. Okay, Abraham really loved Sarah.
I think God wanted us to know that, even though, let's just say, that just for instance, we don't know how old she was when she child. God wanted to let us know that he blessed her with 37 years with her baby.
Okay.
You know, so.
That's right. 37 years with the child that she had waited a lifetime for.
Peter writes that she was a godly woman.
She was a godly woman. Peter holds her up as an example. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. A good example for Christian wives to follow. What else do we know about Sarah? Well, we can. Well, I wasn't going to bring that up. Well, we can see what the Bible says. You want to? It's always safe to read the Bible, isn't it? 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Peter says, "Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. When they see your respectful and pure conduct, do not let your adorning be external, but the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord." I think that's what Gary's getting at. Notice Karen is not here with him tonight. "As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are her children, if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening." And so we see, Leora said Abraham loved Sarah. Sarah loved Abraham. Anything else?
Well, wasn't it? It was Sarah's idea to for the handmaid business, wasn't it?
She
offered that up, if I remember right, and that kind of got things messed up a little bit. But.
It was. She made that offer, and then she got jealous, and ultimately, that resulted in Hagar and Ishmael being cast out. She was also in on the deception, right, of Abimelech, and planning the lie when they came into town. She wasn't perfect either, but guess what? In Genesis chapter 17, verse 15, God calls her a princess. A princess. So Sarah's called a princess by God, and the Hittites, what do they call Abraham? Prince of God. Their reputation was good in their community, right? They didn't have roots there. Of course, God had given them that land. But the Hittites didn't know that or didn't really respect that. So they were just strangers. That's how Abraham identified himself, as a pilgrim and a stranger. But they had a good reputation in that community. It's important to keep that reputation. And it was well earned. It was deserved. What else? Anything else? Okay, she had her name changed.
She liked to laugh. She had a good sense of humor.
She didn't like to laugh out loud, though. So she doubted God and his promise. She was loyal. She was loyal to Abraham. She was loyal to Isaac. She was a good wife. A good mother and a good example, not just to these people who were seeing her in that day, but a good example to us today. But like everyone else who has ever lived and who will continue to live until the Lord returns, she died. she died. And like Gary said, we don't know how long her and Abraham were married. It was at least 62 years, right? She was 10 years younger than Abraham. Abraham left his home at 75, so she would have been 65. And she was his wife then, and she was his wife when she died at 127. So I think that's 62. Don't check my math. I didn't write anything down. And so how did Abraham react to the death of his wife? He wept and he mourned. Is it wrong to cry when someone dies? No. If it's wrong to cry when someone dies, we just found a sin that Jesus committed, right? Lazarus died, John 11:35, and Jesus wept. But Abraham was sad over the loss of his wife. In that loss, did he have any reason at all to be glad? Okay, she's with God. She's with God. He knew that he would have an opportunity to see her again. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 through 18, Paul is addressing there an issue that the Christians in Thessalonica were having concerning their dead loved ones. And Paul there, he doesn't tell them, don't cry, don't weep about the loss of your loved ones. He says, don't sorrow as others who have no hope. There's a difference there, isn't there? I read a story about a man who had, well, it's a preacher story, but it's not a funny preacher story, I guess. But a preacher had run into a friend of his whose wife had died, and he said, I'm sorry for your loss. And his friend responded back to him and said, when you know where something is, you haven't lost it. I thought that was pretty good. He knew where his wife was, and Abraham would have known the same. Abraham didn't lose his wife. They were just separated for a while. Sarah died in faith. We know that from Hebrews chapter 11. The writer gives us, he starts his long list, and then he takes a little break and says, these all died in faith, not having received the promise. And so she died in faith. And so Abraham would have known that she was in the Lord's care. Any questions or comments about the mourning, the weeping of Abraham? All right, so in verse 3, we find Abraham sees that there is still something he has to do. That he can't just stay in that mourning and weeping status. He's got to get up and he's got to do something. What's he need to do? He's got to bury his wife. And I think just about everywhere in our country and probably most places in the world, you can't just dig a hole and put a body in it. You've got to own the place at least, right? And what was legally Abraham's in this place? Nothing legally. Now, what was his? The whole land, right? God had said, this is yours. But he really had no status there in the eyes of the people who were living there. And so Abraham needed to buy some land or get some land. And so he asks for some land. He asks to purchase some land. And this is where we see the respect that the people there had for Abraham. And so he gets up, he asks, who will give me some land? And when he says give me, that's not exactly what he's asking. The idea is, where can I get it? He's willing to pay. He wants to pay. Or else, when it's offered to him for free, he would have just accepted it, right? But we need to understand, too, that that offer of, here, you can just have this, was not really a genuine offer to give. That's not how things worked. Well, it is sort of how those things worked in that day. There was a lot of bargaining back and forth, a lot of false flattery to try to get somebody to pay more than what they ought to pay or cheat somebody out of something. But that wasn't the case on Abraham's side anyway. But they saw him as a prince of God. Some translations say a mighty prince. But the idea is they respected him. He had a good report among those people. Were the Hittites God worshipers? Did they worship the God of Abraham? No, they didn't. But they respected Abraham and his faith. Can we see a parallel for our lives today in that? Everyone that we meet, do they worship the God that we worship? Everyone that we meet, do they have the same faith that we have? Should we give them a reason to look down on us? Should we give them a reason to think poorly about us? We should do everything we can to have a good report among everyone in the world. Whether they're Christians or not, people should see us and recognize us as being different and see us as an example really worth following. They ought to see us and see that we have something they don't. And they ought to want that too. And we need to be willing to share that with them. Yes, Craig.
You can see that played out too whenever, I guess you look at Lot and compare him to Abraham. And Lot decided to live among the people and be like them. And he sat at their city gate. Well, in the end, you saw the respect they gave him and said, please don't do this. And they just said, hey, who are you?
Right.
You're an outsider anyway. And so we see that comparison between Lot and Abraham in that with the people.
Sure. That's a good point. Yes, Mark.
You know, I think it shows a lot of good sense, business-type sense, when Abraham bought this area there at Mount Pelah, because he's going to bury his wife there, and the ownership of the land doesn't dwell just on a friendship, because sometimes people change their mind. Sometimes friends turn out not to be friends. Sometimes, you know, maybe the guy that said you could live here dies in this field now goes to a son and says, nope, I didn't agree to that. Get rid of those bones that are in that cave. That's going to be our family cemetery now. I think God was really directing his business sense that if he has ownership of the land, the people can't change their mind and just go in, haul the bones that are in there out, throw them in the river, whatever. and plant grapes there. So him having ownership says, we can't because we'll be trespassing if we decide we want to do that. It's, there's paperwork, there's legal representation. Even at that point in time, he owns the land. They cannot take it away from him unless he's willing to sell.
That's right, and that's a good point. And let's look in verses 7 through 16. We see how Abraham deals with these people in a very upright, businesslike manner. Most of the time, these sorts of business transactions, they took place at the city gate, and people would gather around the city gate. And so two people who were wanting to make a deal, they would be talking about their deal, and there'd be plenty of people around to witness this. And that's, so when Abraham needed to make a deal for some land, he went to the city gate to make that deal. And he knows, he has his burial plot picked out, the dream site for a burial plot for his family. And so when they say, take whatever one you want, right off the top of his head, he calls out this particular site, the land of Ephron the Hittite. And lo and behold, guess who was there at the city gate? Ephron the Hittite. And he would have heard the offer to take whatever you want. And Abraham says, this is what I want, and I will pay full price. Now that sounds like Abraham's out of his mind, right, Glenn? Full price. Full price. But that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to pay full price. He didn't want to give any room for anybody to think he cheated anybody. And so Ephron says, look, I'll give it to you. Don't even worry about paying me. He said, you know, land like this, it's probably worth about 400 shekels. What's 400 shekels among friends, right? Among men like us. What's Ephron talking about when he says men like us?
I have a question. How much was the shekel at that time compared to our currency?
I don't know offhand. I don't know. It's 2/5 of an ounce, 11 grams. I don't know what the going price of silver is.
Well,
$14 for silver, and he's got 4,400.
A lot of times in the Old Testament, when people are paying in shekels, it refers to the temple shekel, which was a set amount. And in this case, it talks about the merchants have set the price of a shekel, and that's what, because there's no temple at this point. So you're just going off what the market is at that point, as opposed to a set temple shekel, which later on was a settlement.
Okay.
In today's money, it'd be $106.49.
$106. Was that the temple shekel or the merchant shekel?
Well, it just said shekel.
One shekel is $106?
No, that's 400. All 400 shekels.
All 400 shekels.
Okay. So when Ephron just throws out this number, a piece of ground like this is worth about 400 shekels, Abraham immediately says, well, I'll pay it. I'll pay it. If that's what you say it's worth, then that's what I'll pay for it. Now, I ran across some things that indicated that Abraham probably significantly overpaid for that property. Now, that sounds a little odd if it's only $116, but by all accounts, this is from Burton Kaufman's commentary, by all accounts, 400 shekels of silver was an exorbitant price. Omri paid 6,000 shekels of silver for the whole site of Samaria, and Jeremiah gave only 17 shekels for a parcel of land probably about the size of Machpelah. So 17 shekels versus 400 shekels, that's a pretty significant difference. But whatever the cost, Abraham was willing to pay it. Now, of course, Abraham had the money, but he was willing to pay it. He claimed that property for himself. And by the end of Abraham's life, which we'll get to in a couple weeks in chapter 25, we'll find that's the only piece of property that he owned legally in Canaan. The land that was given to him by God. Now, we're sort of jumping ahead, but why would it be important for Abraham to own this property and begin burying his family in Canaan?
Since I was getting from reading why you would pick this land, it seems to be a prized land, a fertile land, and he wanted to make a statement, even though he had a lot of respect for the Hittites, but he's making a foundation for his family to start develop a root.
Okay.
To build something there as a landmark.
Okay. Leora?
Even though it was his land, the Hittites weren't part of God's family. And so I think that's the reason that he purchased that for his family, so that it would be known that it was a legal situation and the Hittites could not be negative about it or whatever.
Okay.
It was good business.
Okay. Can you see Abraham's faith in this purchase and burying his wife in Canaan? Scott?
God promised him this land, or said it was his land, was given it to him, and he don't ask God for it. He goes out on his own and purchases it. So where is the faith in that? God, give me that piece of land so I can bury my people. But no, he goes out and purchases it on his own. So it was something he did. So to me, that's kind of like and I guess that's like us today, where is our faith? I will give it to Abraham. The people, the Hittites, knew he was a man of God. They said that he was. So, in our everyday life, we sin. There's no doubt about our sin. But in the long run, do people come and approach us for godly advice? They would truly know our faith in God, even though we sin. They would truly know our faith in God like they knew Abraham's faith in God. Not only that, but I see that he was also a respecter of authority that wasn't necessarily his authority. The Hittites, had their own little clan. He didn't go in there and say, well, this is my land, scatter yourselves out. He still respected them so in their authority amongst themselves. Just like we today, would respect government or authority, in our case, America.
Okay. But, Abraham moved around a lot. Isaac moved around a lot. Jacob moved around a lot. The Israelites went to Egypt and wandered in the wilderness for 40 years carrying around Jacob's bones, right? A little odd, but they did it. Where were they carrying those bones? Right here, right? And guess what? There was record of Abraham owning that property. Abraham had enough faith in God to know my descendants are going to be as numerous as the stars in the skies, as numerous as the sand on the seashore. I'm burying them all here. I'm buying this land and I'm starting with Sarah. That's faith, right? Even though I may not be here, I may travel around, this land will be ours and my family will be buried on this land. I think that's faith.
Well, you know, I'm thinking too that promise that God gave Abraham is a promise between God and Abraham. These folks really didn't recognize that they didn't own property there anymore. They thought they owned that, so they weren't part of that promise. And so at a whim, they could say, you know, if it was just given to Abraham, they said, we don't recognize that anymore. It's now our property, and you got to get off. Because they didn't the people that lived there did not recognize, nor were they party to, this transaction between Abraham and God. They're a third party that's not addressed in his promise. And so to keep it legal and simple, Abraham buys it, and there's no question anymore about folks whose property this belongs to.
That's right. Alice.
I'm seeing it totally opposite of y'all.
Okay.
To me, the faith would have been to accept the land because it was promised to him. So he didn't have to worry about any of this that we're talking about. The faith would have been barrier there, and you know the land's going to be yours. So I don't understand the purchasing as being faith.
Dodie.
Kind of like Mark, God promised Abraham this land. He never promised it to the Hittites. So Abraham made good on his deal when he purchased the land from the Hittites. He had the faith. God had already given him the land. He knew that in his heart. None of the Hittites knew this. So he just made good on the deal.
Okay. Lisa.
I think this is for all the women in the room. I just think this is very interesting that there is one verse that says, and Abraham buried Sarah. There was no fanfare written. There was no, you know how sometimes they would pay people to weep and mourn and grieve. There's no mention of that. There was just, and buried it. The verse is longer about the trees and the cave than it is about burying Sarah. I just think that's interesting.
Well, Jesus says, well, let the dead bury the dead. Well, in Abraham's case, he mourned and wept. So it's, you know, to me, there's nothing wrong with mourning and weeping about a lost loved one. But then Abraham buried Sarah. In other words, it was done and over with, and it was time for him to move on. There was other things to do in life for God than to, and it's like Jesus, you know, let the dead bury the dead. Look, we got other things to do. We got to spread the good word, the good news, so on and so forth. So it is good to weep, but then there's a time that you're done with that, and you move on.
Great.
Because he said, bury my dead out of my sight. Because, as Scott was saying, he's already mourned her. And so what he's also saying there is, yeah, to move on. So you see that in verse 4.
You know, you don't see the Israelites taking this land until they get to the Jordan River, Moses is there, and he can't cross the Jordan River. Then how does that ownership of the land take place? It happens through battles. They go to Jericho. They march around the city. Walls collapse. They take the city. Then there's battle after battle after battle. And, yeah, God said it's your land, but you're going to have to fight for it if you're going to have property rights here. And so to me, it's not a thing of faith that Abraham, one way or the other, about buying this property. This is an earthly thing, so that, you know, we're all members of God's kingdom, and that's separate. In a way, I say that's separate from, you know, I had to go buy my house and put a, you know, pay mortgage and do all that kind of stuff to own that property. Well, you know, if I walk up to Joe Blow and say, well, God gave me that property, here, give me a deed, they're going to do what? They're going to laugh at me. And it would have been the same thing, I believe, too, with Moses. I mean, with Abraham, later on down the road, well, they gave us this property, I'm going to take it back. And they said, no, you don't understand. You don't own this property. It was lent to you. So it's not a test of faith that he's buying this property. It's a legal, earthly transaction that's taking place.
Okay. I mean, I agree. It is a legal transaction. But I think he had full well in his mind, my family is being buried in this promised land.
Absolutely.
It goes back to the saying, render to Caesar what is Caesar's and render to God what is God.
Okay. Gary?
I'm wondering if he just paid the price. In the last chapter, 2 Samuel, David's told to go erect an altar at a threshing floor. Talk to the man. Man said, I give it to you, the implements, the oxen, everything. And David said, nope, I will not offer something to God that didn't cost me anything. Maybe he needed it to cost him something because he lost his wife. Why would I bury in some place that was just given to me? I want to pay for it. It's mine.
Could be. I thought Missy raised her hand. Lost where I was. Who's buried in this tomb? Sarah, that day. Who else?
Abraham,
Isaac, Rebecca, Leah, Jacob. We come to the end of the book of Genesis, and we'll talk about this more when we get there. And we find a full tomb, don't we? A full tomb. We fast forward to the New Testament. We come to the end of the Gospels. What do we find? An empty tomb. An empty tomb. We come to the end of time, the end of the world. What will we find? How many bodies will be in that tomb? How many bodies will be in any tombs? None. Every tomb will be empty. The only piece of property that Abraham legally owned in the promised land was a tomb. And if one commentator said, if Jesus returns, or if Jesus doesn't return to take us to heaven, the only piece of property each of us will own in this world will be a place in the cemetery. We can't take anything with us. Everything will be left behind. And so we do well to heed the advice of Jesus to lay up treasures in heaven, not on this earth. If we live by faith, we will be able to die by faith. And when we die by faith, we have this beautiful picture of eternity. As we think about the people who would first read this account in Genesis chapter 23, what lessons could they learn from it? We've touched on a couple of things that we could learn from it, and we'll talk about a few more. But what are some lessons that the Israelites, as they're reading this, what are some lessons they could learn? What would it mean for them?
God always keeps his promises somehow.
Okay, God will keep his promises. Okay, honor the dead. They could see a connection, I think, to the promised land, them to the promised land, right? They had these bones as they're wandering in the wilderness. They had these bones. They had to do something with them. They had to take them somewhere. This is where they're taking them. That would be nice to know why, right? It would answer a why question for them. Scott?
Respect others.
Okay.
Don't have the same
Okay. The Israelites would come into various places. They would ultimately, in the book of Joshua, here they are. They're coming into Canaan, and they're going to take it, right? And they had faith in God. How many battles did Joshua lose?
One.
Zero. But then he won. He lost. How many wars did Joshua lose? He may have lost a battle, but he didn't lose the war. So there are some things the Israelites definitely could learn as they're reading this or hearing this. Now, what about us? Okay. That's right. We, like Abraham, we're just passing through. This world is not our home. I don't know if y'all sing that one here. I used to sing it. We need to view our lives that way and live for eternity, not for today. Bill.
Ever since we started these for the last several chapters. I mean, we've looked at Abraham and him making mistakes, him saying this is my sister. All the way, if you look at Isaac, what did he do? He did the same thing. This is my sister. And if you go, I've read ahead, but Jacob says this is But if at the end of this, what did Sarah? I mean, if you go Sarah with Ishmael. And Hagar, she said, get rid of him. Why? Because she had a lack of faith there or something, because she didn't want that to interfere with her son's promise. Is that not right? I mean, and so that's us. We're always trying to intercede for God because we think, I can't do this. We can't do this. And we've seen this. And if we don't get this out of this lesson, for me anyway, that God has to be the final decision. Even though I have a tendency to try to redirect what God really wants me to do. And we all have a habit of doing that, I believe.
One of the things that I hope that we can take away from this lesson is that we have hope. We have hope. And our loved ones have hope. And when we die, it's not the end. That it's only the beginning. And for those of us who are in Christ, it's so much better. And so, yes, let's weep when our loved ones pass away, but let's have joy in the better that they're experiencing. Thanks for your attention. No class next week. We'll start back up the week after next in Genesis chapter 24. Thank you for your discussion tonight.